This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. For guys like you who want a great shave experience for a fraction of what you're paying now, go to harrys.com and get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code CAMPFIRE when you check out. Again, get $5 off your first purchase by entering the code CAMPFIRE when you check out. Thanks, Harry's.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. And my goodness, what a show we have for you today. Some great stories as we head towards Thanksgiving here in the States. One of my favorite holidays. A little over a week away as I record this, and I'm very thankful for all of these great stories. So let's dig into the feast, and here's the campfire. Danielle's on the line. She's been listening about a year. She's calling us from the beautiful state of Hawaii. Now it's your turn, everybody, to get jealous. And she's going to tell us something else that may make some of you jealous if you're the ghost hunting type. She used to live in a haunted apartment, and she's going to tell us about all of the spookiness and strangeness that ensued. Danielle, welcome to the program, and please tell us what happened.
All right, thank you. So my story is based in an apartment that I lived in from about fall of 2008 to fall of 2010. My dad had owned it, and they'd done a renovation about a few years back. They totally gutted the place, renovated really nice. The renovation had a lot of problems, a lot of delays. It was supposed to be about 6 weeks and turned into over a year. They rented it out and then I moved in. So a little bit of relevant background info. In 2009, one of the bathrooms, the guest bathroom, the toilet flooded and totally flooded the house. They ripped everything apart. So I was basically living in a construction zone, more or less. I always kept that bathroom closed. It was musty smelling. It was humid, and I ended up using the master bath. Second little bit of relevant background info was that school year in 2009-2010, I babysat a seven-year-old girl every day after school, and she would come over to the apartment with me once in a while. So the first year that I lived there, 2008-2009, not much happened. As a kid, I was always really into creepy stuff and hauntings, but I'd never had any actual personal experiences. So it's always kind of like wondering, I wonder if this place is haunted. It was kind of my first place by myself. Little stuff like lights would go on and off, fans would go on and off, but I just chalked it up to bad wiring. One time I was sleeping and I heard my boyfriend, he was in Canada at the time, and I heard his voice calling from me up above, kind of up above on the ceiling. Oh. And that was the first time that anything actually happened. So fast forward to a year later, one of my friends, Matthias, was staying with me for a couple of months. And for whatever reason, we had borrowed my dad's car that night. So we were driving in, and I stopped at the guard shack, and the guard lady was signing me in with the car. And she's writing on the piece of paper and she's chatting and she goes, have you gotten your place cleansed yet? And I just stopped and I looked at her and I'm like, what? And she looks up at me and she's like, your place, it's extremely haunted. Have you gotten it cleansed yet? And I was like, I felt like I got punched. And I was like, no. So I totally refused to go into the apartment that night. We ended up setting up like a cleansing the day after. Turns out that this guard lady was a Wiccan priest or Wiccan priestess. So we set up a cleansing the day after. She brought along with her this girl who I guess had grown up in that same apartment. She lived in a different apartment now in that same condo. she had gotten in, this girl Tina had gotten really into ghost hunting after all of her experiences growing up in that apartment. So the next night we do the whole cleansing, everything's going fine. We smudge it with sage, we do the walkthrough. Tina had brought like a recorder and an EM something device to detect the energies or something, but she brought the recorder, we had it set up. Mm-hmm. The next day she called me and Kate was like, you need to come listen to this cleansing. So you can hear us kind of going through, asking the spirits to leave, blah, blah, blah. And right as we're walking past the recorder, into the recorder, we can hear this angry woman's voice say, "Get out." And we're like, oh my God, this is crazy. So that was kind of the only thing that happened on that cleansing. My friend Matthias ended up leaving. He went back to Europe. And from here on, the chronological order is a little bit off. I can't really remember. It's been so long, but a couple instances that have happened. One night I was falling asleep. Actually, I was sleeping and my cat was sleeping on my pillow. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, maybe about 3 a.m. or so, I hear this huge crash coming from that green bathroom, that one I always kept closed because of the flooding. Mm-hmm. And it sounded like someone had like dropped a box onto the floor and all the contents had spilled out. I'm like, oh God. So my cat actually, as soon as that happened, ran towards the door and was just sitting there staring. So I got up, turned on the hallway light, and ripped open the door to the bathroom, turned on the light. Absolutely nothing was on the floor. And one thing about that bathroom was always really musty and hot, very humid. It was ice cold. It was like the temperature had dropped like 20 degrees. So I backed out of there. I was like, oh God, this is freaky. I backed out, turned to my left, and floating on the wall was this huge white mist, just like huge, like the size of the wall, just floating there.
Oh my.
Another incident was, I was falling asleep. Actually, I was falling asleep. It always happened at night. And I was woken up to the smell of a cake baking. And I'm so confused because we're at the end apartment. So the kitchen is just up against the wall. There's no apartment adjacent to the kitchen side. And I get up and I go into the kitchen. So there's cakes baking. And I go out in the hallway and nothing's there. No smell. And I go back in the kitchen. I called one of the security guards on duty. I'm like, can you come down here? So he comes down, confirms it's coming from my apartment. He leaves. And I turn the light off in the kitchen, walk back towards my bedroom to go back to sleep. And as I'm passing that green bathroom that I kept closed, mm-hmm. I don't know if you've ever heard like a spirit speaking, but it's kind of like in a different dimension. It's kind of something you got to tune into or that you're already tuned into. Mm-hmm. And I heard a chorus of about 8 voices singing happy birthday.
Ooh, that gave me chills.
Yeah. A couple other. Okay. So that girl, Nicole, that I babysat, she was 7 at the time and she'd come over to the apartment and I never told her anything about this, about the apartment being haunted. But she one day in the car just pulled me out of the blue. She's like, "Danielle, you know, your apartment's haunted, right?" And I was like, I just stopped and I freaked out. She goes, "Yeah, remember that time I was changing clothes in the green bathroom and I ran out of there and I seemed kind of scared?" I was like, "Yeah." And she's like, "There were 5 or 6 creatures looked like Gollum from the Lord of the Rings coming out of the shower at me and I ran out of there." And around that time, I had actually moved out for about 3 months because the activity had gotten so bad. I wish I had written down all of the instances that had happened, but I moved out. And during that time, that girl, Tina, the ghost hunter girl, had set up a recorder in there. Mm-hmm. And when we listened to the recordings, it sounded like a family was living there. I was the only person with a key. The resident manager didn't have a key. Sounded like about 8 or 9 people were living there. There was a woman who sang. She had several small, like, yippy dogs. No one in the apartment building had dogs. There was a young boy, several men, another woman, and a sick woman who constantly coughed and whispered, "Help me," into the recorder. We heard them cooking, doing laundry, talking to each other about daily activities and chores. And so when I asked Nicole more about the spirits in my house, she would tell me, "Yeah, there's a little dog. It's a skeleton dog that Olive, your cat, plays with." And she's like, "There's a little boy that lives there too. There's a lady, she has the dog." So everything that she was telling me lined up to what we had heard on this recording.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So, like I said, there's so many other stuff. I got attacked once, actually. It, like, jumped up right on me and, like, grabbed my shoulders when I was in the living room. But we did a bunch of cleansings that never really seemed to get rid of anything. I did find out, after doing some research on this apartment, that it was built on an ancient Hawaiian burial ground. Mm-hmm. And in the 40s, it was actually a hospital and an orphanage on the property during World War II. So a lot of history.
That might make sense.
A lot of history back there, yeah.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, to me, it seems, you know, all of us are interested in this. I think everybody listening to this is interested, by definition, self-selecting to this stuff to some extent. But it's a different thing to be interested in it and read about it in the abstract, but to be in the thick of it and live with it. Now, some people that would drive away from this interest, it seems like it's only intensified yours.
Yeah, I think being in it has gotten me to tune in. I'm not as tuned in as I used to be as I was experiencing it, but I'm definitely still interested in the subject.
Yeah, it is. It's quite a series of stories, actually. Well, thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it and hope you'll come back if you have more to share.
All right. Thanks, Jim.
This episode of Jim Harold's Campfire is brought to you by Harry's. Now, before we get to our next great campfire stories, I want to give a shout out to our friends at Harry's.com and thank them first for supporting Jim Harold's Campfire, but I really want to give them a major kudos for what they're doing in November, or should I say Movember. Now, if you haven't heard it, this month is Movember, and there are a bunch of guys not shaving this month in support of research on men's major health issues. And Harry's is the official partner of the Movember Foundation and will be donating money and helping raise awareness for men's health. So whether you're growing your beard or want an amazing shave, Harry's is a company you can feel good about. Now, I love the roots of Harry's because they were started by two guys who are passionate about creating a better shaving experience by delivering an amazing shave at an affordable price directly to your door. And not only do they deliver on that promise, on that passion, but they also give 1% of their sales and 1% of their time back to the communities they serve. Harry sent me a set, and I absolutely love what I've got. I've got a beautiful razor handle, multiple razor blades. I have both the shave cream and the foaming gel. So I can pick and choose. And it's really great stuff. I love using it. And the handle, I love kind of the heft of the handle. It's fantastic. And there's a great one that you might want to check out. The Starter Truman set is an amazing deal. That includes 3 razor blades, a razor handle, and a choice of either shave cream or foaming shave gel. Now, on that one, if you use that money-saving code CAMPFIRE at checkout, with the $5 off, that gets you that set for just $10. What a deal. Go to Harry's.com, and regardless of what set you pick, get $5 off your first purchase with coupon code CAMPFIRE. That's Harry's.com, and enter the coupon code CAMPFIRE at checkout. And we thank Harry's for their support of Jim Harold's Campfire.
If you love these great ghost stories, please tell a friend about Jim Harold's Campfire today. Now, we return to the show.
Next up is Corey from Utah. She's a longtime listener, been listening for several years now. And she actually has a story that specifically relates to one of my podcasts and then another appearance on another podcast, some strange goings on while listening to the programs. And I can't wait to hear what happened. Corey, welcome to the program. Thank you for your longtime listenership. And tell us what happened. Tell us what happened.
All right. Well, this was late 2009, early 2010. I was working for a company here in Utah, and we're fountain time. We had clients all over the country, and so their people would come in 7 o'clock in case somebody on the East Coast wanted to call in. First thing, 9 o'clock their time, and then some people would stay until 6 for people on the East Coast so they can call in up to 5 their time. And I was working the 6 o'clock shift. And I was the only one in my department who did at the time, and so the last hour, just my normal schedule would be the last hour of my day, and I would be working alone in the office. So one night, everybody, 5 o'clock rolls around, all my coworkers leave, and I'm working alone. I'm listening to the Paranormal podcast, and I know this is probably the only 14 podcast I was listening to at the time, but it really does play a part in this.
Okay.
And I'm just working along, and I see movement out of the corner of my eye, and I turn and look, and I see these three little, I guess, call them shadow figures. They're about 4 feet tall. They look like they're wearing the tall pointed hat, and they're just really spiky, like there's spikes all down their back, and like they're wearing spiky shoes.
Oh, my.
Like, you know. And there were three of them, and it was their watch. They ran around the printer, there's a big printer in the center of the room, and then they entered into a cabinet on the printer where the diffuser is located. And this printer was something of a lemon that it just, even though everything was in perfect working order, we could never make it work right.
Right.
It was a diffuser that was always giving us problems. And I don't know if I thought gremlins at that point, but I was just kind of staring.
Yeah, your description reminded me of like Spike from the Gremlins.
Yeah. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'm listening to the spooky podcast. I'm going to turn it off. I'm going to turn off some music or something and finish out my shift.
Right.
And so I did that and finished out my shift, like for maybe another 45 minutes. I went to leave. And as I was leaving, the boss's wife is coming into the building.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see her car. And I mean, it's a small enough company that you know your coworker's car, especially to the boss's car, is
sure.
The boss's wife's car. And I see two more of these creatures. Kind of spiky shadow things, and it was after dark, but the parking lot was well lit. And they go around her truck and up through, looked like they were going up into the right tire well and up into the engine. And at this point, I was just like, I started freaking out. I'm like, well, what do I do? I can't go back into the building because it's locked for tonight.
Right.
I've got my boss's phone number, but do I call him and say, I just saw some gremlins go into your truck? how do I do that and not get fired?
Right.
Finally, I just figured, well, there's nothing I can do. So I gave up and I went home. But I wonder if that truck was kind of a lemon too, because I had one of my coworkers' fathers owned a mechanic shop. And I know my boss came and was talking to her. I'm not a car person, so I didn't really pay attention to the conversation. But I know that he was talking to her about hours and costs and things like that. But the shop is for both European vehicles and this is a big old American pickup truck. Anyway, so for the past maybe 2 months,
mm-hmm.
I've just kind of had this feeling like, okay, no, I need to call in my gremlin story. I need to tell Jim this gremlin story. And then recently, you were on an episode of the Grayling Report with Mike Hanks.
Yes.
And actually before you called in, or before they brought you in, Mike read an email from one of his listeners describing basically the same creature I saw and kind of acting in the same way. It wasn't necessarily going into anything mechanical, but just able to walk through solid objects kind of the same way
wow.
that I didn't. Yeah. And the email ended that he had never heard, the emailer had never heard of anything like that. Cause usually you hear shadow figures are like
right.
6, 7, 8 feet tall, but he'd never heard of one of these kind of small spiky shadow figures. And I hadn't either. And I actually heard that. I'm like, well, that's my story because people are going to think that I copied that, but then I decided, that's when I decided to sign up to call in. And if, you know, that same person emailed in is listening to this, let them know that I've seen them too. I don't know what it was. I don't know if they're gremlins. I don't know if they're something else. but I've seen those small psychic shadow figures too.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. There are so many strange things in the world that I never discount anything. I mean, yes, it's an incredible story, but I believe you at your word. You saw what you said you saw. And the thing is that, you know, there are actually reports going back to the idea that, you know, the idea of gremlins, a lot of that came from the Second World War, you know, the thought that there's some kind of creatures that like to cause havoc on mechanical devices and all of that. They have been reported during the Second World War. So, you know, it is food for thought. And Corey, thank you for your longtime listenership and thank you for sharing this story. I think it'll have a lot of people thinking.
Yeah. Well, thank you, Jim.
Next up on the campfire is Stephanie from Texas. Now, sometimes things happen to us that we may try to explain away, or sometimes things may happen to us that we immediately assign to paranormal causes. Stephanie had an experience that she thought one thing, it turned out to be something else. She's going to tell us about it now. Stephanie, welcome to the program, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
So tell us your story.
So are you talking about the story that happened to me in college?
Yes.
I assume. So in the middle of the night, I was awoken by a weird sensation. And I, at the time in college, I was watching a lot of ghost hunting shows. So I immediately, in my sort of half-sleep state, assumed that it was a ghost shaking my bed. And I got out of bed, I sort of jumped out of bed, and I stood there just sort of looking at it, and I couldn't see it moving, but when I touched it, it was definitely shaking.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of looked around my room, and it didn't look like anything else had been, was moving. So I sort of just sleepily was like, okay, well, you know, if I just give it a few minutes, maybe it'll just do its thing, and then, you know, I can go back to sleep. So I went to the bathroom, and when I got back from the bathroom, I went back to my bed, and I touched it, and it was still shaking. So, again, I was sort of not really sure what to do because it was the middle of the night, and nobody else was awake. So I just sat down at my desk, and I just sat there for a few minutes, and then finally, it seemed like everything sort of cleared up, and I touched the bed, and it was done shaking. So I laid down, went back to sleep, didn't really think much of it. But when I woke up the next morning, I was like, damn, that was really weird.
Sure.
And I was thinking about it when I went to class, and I was a geology major at the time. So I get to class and I was like, gosh, who am I going to tell about this? Like, that's not going to believe me. And before I even had the chance to tell anybody, somebody asked me, did you feel that earthquake last night? And I was like, oh my God, thank God it was an earthquake. I was positive that it was a ghost. But sure enough, in central Illinois, we had an earthquake that woke me up in the middle of the night.
Well, I mean, we're certainly one who's, we're not afraid to say, yeah, that's paranormal. But you got to remember, sometimes the simple explanation is the one that fits. Although Illinois, you don't have a lot of earthquakes there. So that was very unusual.
Yeah, it was actually, there's a fault line that runs through the Missouri-Illinois border, and it was a pretty sizable earthquake that ran through that fault. Yeah. Well, we just happened to feel it in central Illinois there.
Well, I assume you're still interested in the paranormal, though, because you listen to this show.
Oh, yes, definitely.
Well,
always trying to keep an open mind.
Thank you so much. We really appreciate you being on the show and listening to The Campfire.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Ariana is on the line from New York. She is a new listener, just listening for 2 months, but yet she signed up to tell her story. That let that be a lesson to everybody to go over to jimherald.com/campfire and do the same. She's from New York, and she's going to tell us about this story of ghosts in the yard. Ariana, welcome as a listener and as a storyteller, and please tell us what happened.
Hi, thanks for having me. I'm very excited to be able to tell my story.
Thank you.
So I guess where I can start is that when I was about 10, my sister and I spent a summer at my cousin's house. And we're from a very small town in Long Island, and it's actually a very old town. It goes back to 1600. So this house wasn't very old, but it sat on some property that housed some, some old things.
Mm-hmm.
So whenever we went into that house, I never felt comfortable or how do I feel? Like I felt like I was being watched all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So my cousin at the time had three children, and Natalie, the first one, was able to see things that I guess other people could not see.
Okay.
So she was always saying strange things about, you know, people that either lived in the house that we weren't aware of, not lived in the house, but people in the bathroom. For example, there was a child crying in her closet that freaked the hell out of us. Because, you know, what five-year-old talks of such things?
Right.
So needless to say, we were kind of weirded out, my sister and I. So whenever they wanted to go play in the backyard, I was always really hesitant, and I never knew why. So skip to 10 years later, 12 years actually, she's 15, and I had an opportunity to talk with her recently about, you know, that house. They no longer live there, but it's always an infamous topic of conversation because, you know, people never really felt comfortable, not just myself.
Mm-hmm.
So she was like, oh yeah, I guess I never really got to tell you, you know, what I had seen because I was so little. And apparently in that backyard, she would see people in white robes.
Oh my.
And as a five-year-old, you know, obviously you don't know what that is. And she learned through history class that they were KKK members.
Oh my.
And she actually saw a burning cross in that backyard as well.
Oh, my goodness.
So that freaked me out because she's white and I'm of mixed race. And she was uncomfortable with that yard, but she didn't feel threatened like I was. And I noticed my mouth dropped to the floor and I couldn't believe what I had just heard. Because, you know, I don't see anything, but to have that, I guess that feeling validated in that respect was, you know, pretty crazy. And going back to the little boy that she had seen in her closet, he was actually a little black boy. And we don't know what happened to him, but he was always crying and looking for his mother. So I don't know if the two are related.
So do
you know,
do you think that maybe this what looked like almost ghostly KKK members, do you think that was some maybe kind of residual psychic replay of some type?
I it's definitely possible because, I have a great uncle who actually had a cross burned in his yard in the 60s.
Oh boy.
Not far from that house. So it's definitely, not out of the realm of possibility.
Now, maybe you said this, I mentioned, where was the house? Was it, wasn't in New York, was it? Or was it south, or where was this house?
It was Oyster Bay, New York. So,
okay.
North Shore of Long Island.
Oh, my. Oh, okay. So there was active, there were these kind of things were active even that far north.
Yes, definitely.
Yeah, it's sad. It's a sad chapter of our history, indeed. Now, you mentioned Natalie was 5 at the time. Does she still see things to these? I know they don't live in this house, but does she still see things?
I think so. She doesn't like to talk about it.
Right.
So I was kind of surprised that she opened up that information to me because she's seen a lot of different things. I could tell you another story about her as well if we have time.
If you want to, go right ahead.
Yeah. So a little bit of backstory. My mom is an OBGYN. And Natalie's mom worked for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she was about the same age, 4 or 5. And Natalie was hanging out at the office. And my mom had a patient come in with an emergency. She was pregnant and wasn't feeling very well. So this woman came in after hours with her husband and another child of hers who's about Natalie's age. And my aunt was like, no problem. Like, I'll watch the girls. You guys go need what you need to do. Because my mom needed to examine this woman.
Right.
And they're playing, they're coloring. 10 minutes later, my mom comes out, and it was an emergency, so they had to go to the hospital. And the little girl was having so much fun that she didn't want to leave, and she started to cry and, you know, had a little bit of a fit. So Natalie goes to my aunt, Graham, the baby's crying. And my aunt goes, yeah, Nat, I know. She's throwing a temper tantrum, like, right in front of me. And Nat goes, not that baby, the baby in her belly.
Oh.
And, and the next day, unfortunately, that woman miscarried.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Well, they certainly say, younger people, kids are more sensitive. And then in this case, it sounds like even more sensitivity there going on.
Definitely. Definitely. I've never met another little girl like her.
Well, Ariana, thank you so much for being a new listener. And I notice a trend that our newer listeners sometimes are more likely to call in and share their stories than those who have been listening for a long time. So if you've been listening for a long time, you've been hesitant, take Ariana's example and go over to jimherold.com/campfire and sign up to share your story. Ariana, it's so nice to meet you. And thank you so much for being a part of the campfire today.
Oh, no, thank you. I really appreciate your time.
Happy Thanksgiving, everyone. We wanted to do something special for Thanksgiving to thank you for all of your support over the last year. So starting on November 23rd through November 30th, the Campfire 4 book, which is 70 spooky stories, my newest book just out in September, on the Kindle will be only 99 cents in the U.S. store. That's 99 cents. And we will also have a sale in the Amazon.co.uk sale at the same time. I think that's going to be 99 pence. So those are the deals. And my thought was, geez, you know, a lot of people in the States, and we put our British friends there. We know you don't celebrate Thanksgiving, but we're thankful for you too. And we put it on sale because we thought, hey, a lot of people will be traveling this time of year. They might want to take a book with them on their Kindle or their device. You do not need a Kindle to read a Kindle book. You just need the free Kindle app from Amazon, and it'll work on pretty much any smartphone or tablet. So why not offer the audience who's been so good to us for the last year something a little extra special, 99 cents on the U.S. Amazon.com store, November 23rd through the 30th. So if you're hearing this before then, it's not on sale yet, not until November 23rd, and then 99 pence in the Amazon.co.uk store. And we're so appreciative to everything you do for us. I thought that it's the least that we could do. And heck, if you already have a copy of the book, buy one for a friend. Thank them for whatever they are to you or whatever they've done to you or whatever they mean to you. And geez, it only costs less than a buck, and you'd be helping me too. So that 99-cent sale, that's going to start November 23rd through November 30th on the Amazon.com store, and then the 99-pence sale, parallel times, over at Amazon.co.uk. We thank you so much for listening and being a part of the campfire, and now for another spooky story. Next on the line is Melanie from Montana, and she has... well, some of the spookiest encounters that we've ever encountered on this program in the way of shadow people or shadow encounters. Just that's something that I never expected when we started the show, but it's become a big part of what we do in hearing these stories. She has a couple of them that she's going to share with us today. I'm looking forward to it. Melanie, I know you were on a couple of years ago. Welcome back, and please tell us what happened.
Well, these happened when I was pregnant with my son, and then shortly after, when he was a baby. I lived in a big house with my then boyfriend, and we had roommates, and they had this big dog. It was a big Rottweiler, and most of the time he would sleep in their room, so I wouldn't see him at night, but I got up in the middle of the night one night, pregnant, had to go to the bathroom, and it was really dark, so I turned the corner into towards the bathroom, which was maybe 10 feet from our door. It was right at the end of the hall, and I looked down, and I saw a big black blob across the floor. I thought it was Bear, the dog, and I went to step over it, and I figured, because, you know, tired, big dog, stepped over it, and I figured I would have touched him. So when I got to the bathroom, I turned the light on, and I looked back, and there was nothing there. Mm. That kind of freaked me out. I mean, it was definitely a big black thing there across the hallway.
Right.
and he wasn't there. And I kind of, I went in, did my thing, and ran back to the bedroom, because I was like, oh, that was weird. And then a couple of days later, there was a big, like I woke up sweating, like from a pretty, I don't remember the dream, but it seemed like it was a pretty violent dream.
Mm-hmm.
And I opened my eyes, and against the wall, there was a it looked like the outline of a person with spiky hair.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a shadow. And I saw it and I gasped and it ran. I saw it like run across the wall towards my door and like kind of disappear into the corner. And I just laid there, was, you know, kind of shaken up for a minute. It was like, whoa, did I really just see that? What was that? that was very strange. And I told my boyfriend, and he was just kind of like, you're just pregnant and seeing things. You're fine. You know, don't worry about it.
Right.
Which, not very comforting.
Not, doesn't sound like it.
And then when we moved into another place, smaller one-bedroom apartment, and one night I was in the kitchen doing dishes. My baby was then, he was maybe 6 months old. He was not a good sleeper. He was having a really hard time falling asleep. And I'd turn on the little mobile above his crib.
Right.
And, you know, it would kind of soothe him a little bit. So I was in the living or in the kitchen doing dishes. And his dad was in the bathroom. I think he was shaving or doing something. And suddenly I could hear really loud whistling coming from, I thought it was coming from the hallway at first. I thought it was his dad whistling along with the mobile. And I kind of got irritated and I went and knocked on the door. I said, "Hey, are you whistling? I'm trying to put the baby to sleep. Stop." And because it was loud. And he said, he opened the door. He's like, "What are you talking about?" And I realized I could still hear it. And it was coming from the bedroom. And I was like, "Oh, I think there's somebody in the bedroom." And he said, "What are you talking about?" And so we listened at the door and we could still hear it. And I opened the door like just a smidge, and because there was a big window in there that was low and you could very easily just hop into the bedroom. And I was like, "Someone come in, just, you know, what's going on?" And we opened the door and I peeked in there, and there was a black figure kind of curled over the crib.
Oh man.
Like someone was looking down into it. And I immediately slammed the door. I was like, "Oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, what is that?" And he saw it, and we could still hear the whistling, and then it stopped and the mobile was still going. And I was just kind of like, what? And I opened the door and it was gone. But I was like, oh man, what was that thing looking at my kid? You know, I was like, oh, I have no idea. The one thing about that apartment was that when we moved in there, you know, there was kind of it's just one bedroom, and in the bedroom, kind of where our beds, like our bed was on one side and the crib was on the other side,
right?
Facing walls, and kind of between, but kind of under the crib a little bit, there was a dark spot on the carpet. And, you know, I just figured a stain or whatever. But then also on the wall, we noticed it, you know, as you're laying in bed and you look at a wall, you can see, you know, the texture and whatever. And there was little speckles of what looked like dried blood, little tiny like sprays.
Oh my. Oh, like splatter.
Yeah, it was not a good neighborhood, and it very well could have been that somebody died in that room, and that was the remnants. And we only lived there for about a year, but that's the only thing we ever experienced there. But it was very, very strange, and I was very unsettled.
Oh my goodness, that's frightening, and especially when it involves your small child.
Yeah, and I mean, I was not proud of the fact that I slammed the door. Oh no, I have to go get my baby. You know, but I was so scared.
Well, you know what you say, when you're in a plane, you put the mask on yourself first.
Right. I guess so. I figure that maybe it was trying to get him to sleep, because he would cry for hours.
Mm-hmm.
And it was you know, back in the day when at the beginning of, you know, let your baby cry himself to sleep. It's good for them or whatever. Teach him self-soothing. But he was having none of that. And he would cry for a really long time. And I'm thinking maybe it was, he was trying to help him and, you know, comfort him and help him go to sleep. At least that's what I hope.
Well,
that is what gives me comfort in the memory of it anyway.
Yeah. Well, it really is quite a story. And I really appreciate you taking time to share it with us, Melanie. And I hope if you have any more stories, you'll come back on the show.
Okay, thank you.
Next up on the campfire is Anne. She's just been listening for something like a week or so. She discovered us while looking for something that was exactly what the campfire is, she says. She's calling from Southeast Michigan. We're so glad to have her on the program. And she's going to tell us a story about when, in her words, she elbowed death in the face. Now, that sounds like a brave person to me. Anne, welcome to the program. As a listener and as an experiencer, please tell us what happened.
Well, thanks for having me, Jim. It all started, this was December of 2011,
mm-hmm.
and I became very, very, very ill, and actually had an experience that was a lot like a Dr. House episode, where it just all kinds of medical things were going wrong and nobody could figure out what was wrong with me. I went into the emergency room on midnight of New Year's that year. So it was 2011, and then entered the hospital and was in the hospital for about 2 weeks. And during that time, I had this really weird experience that, you know, I've told, and people have said, well, you were on pain medication and you had a different frame of mind because you were going through something traumatic. But, you know, I know what I saw and it was definitely very real to me. So I was in the hospital. I had been admitted, and I was in the hospital for a total of 2 weeks, and mm-hmm. I was maybe like the fourth or fifth day in. And I was lying in the hospital bed, and I had this horrible migraine. So I was very sensitive to light and sound.
Right.
And we had, I had a private room and the door was closed, and there was a sign on the door that said, you know, please keep the lights off when you enter the room for the nursing staff. And they wouldn't all, you know, heed that sign. They would come in and turn the lights on anyway. And I was, lying there with my eyes closed, and I was kind of lying in the bed with the back of the bed kind of inclined a little bit, so I wasn't completely flat on my back.
Right.
And I was in this rectangular room, and the door was to my right, and then the bed was facing a wall. And I, through my closed eyes, I could tell that the light had been turned on in the room. So I opened my eyes and the door was open, and it was daytime. So there was a lot of kind of like diffused daylight in the room anyway. But, you know, all of a sudden the light was brighter and it made me open my eyes.
Mm-hmm.
And through the door walks a doctor and a nurse.
Okay.
And they walk past and through the door, past the foot of my bed and around to the left side of my bed.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm thinking, okay, I wasn't expecting another doctor to come in. So here's yet another specialist that I need to talk to. You know, at this point, I had talked to 5 or 6 different doctors as they were trying to figure out what was wrong with me. So this wasn't abnormal to see a new doctor come in.
Okay.
And the doctor was leading, and behind him was a nurse. And I was kind of focused on watching the nurse as I crossed in front of my bed,
mm-hmm.
Because she just looked, she had this very kind of, not mean, but more of like a blank expression on her face, like kind of not really stern, but just very serious.
Okay.
And they were very quiet, and I was looking at her because their outfits were slightly different than what I had seen. And this was really my first major hospital experience ever. So a lot of these, you know, just talking to the nurses and the different tests and things that I was going through were, you know, totally new to me. So I
right.
didn't really know what to expect. And the nurse was wearing, they were both wearing kind of an, like doctor's robes, but they were more tailored and like closer fit, more like a fitted look, where all the other nurses had been wearing scrubs and the doctors had scrubs with just like a jacket on over the scrubs. So totally different look than what I had seen so far.
Mm-hmm.
And as they're walking in front of me, you know, I'm kind of looking at her and I look at the doctor and I realize the doctor really isn't a person. He's a black shadow.
Oh my goodness.
He's wearing a coat. Like I can see the coat on him, the doctor's coat, the white coat, but where his head is and where any body parts that would be showing, it's all just like a black shadowy mask, like in the form of a head. So I'm kind of looking at them like, okay, what is going on? You know, is it the morphine talking? What's happening? And they walked around to the left side of my bed and they walked right up against my bed as if they're going to start talking to me or examining me or something.
Right.
And I'm looking at the nurse and I realize that she's looking at me almost as if there's nothing there. Like she's not even looking at me. She's kind of looking past me, like through me. And she's really, really pale. And I look back up at this doctor thing. And as I'm looking at him, you know, I had the sense that it was male and that it was supposed to be a doctor. He bends, just kind of folds at the waist.
Right.
And slowly it bends down closer and closer and closer to me until his like shadow face is right in front of my face.
Huh.
And just as a, you know, reflex, I took my elbow and jabbed my elbow at his face because I just got this all of a sudden in that split second, a sense that if I let him get too close, he's going to take my soul or something.
Oh my goodness. Oh my goodness.
So I jabbed him in the face with my elbow, and as soon as I did that, it was like a switch was flipped, and I had almost been looking through the window of another dimension, and all of a sudden, it flipped back to the real physical world. And it wasn't so much, you know, it wasn't like I was opening my eyes and waking up from a dream.
Right.
It was like something turned off, and all of a sudden, you know, that shadow ghost doctor and the nurse were gone, and there was a real physical nurse walking into my room. And I kind of said, you know, did you see me move? Did I just like move my arm? And she said, no, I didn't see that. I wasn't really looking. I kind of felt that it was almost like my soul was reacting to, if that was death, death being that close, and it was saying, okay, now is not your time. Get back from me. Go away. You know, go to somebody else's room. You know, not here today, not now. I'm not ready to leave this earth.
Wow.
And it was, you know, I was very, very ill, so I really didn't think anything of it. I thought, okay, that's just a crazy dream with everything that I'm going through.
Right.
And I didn't think about it that much until it was, you know, a good few months later. I was having lunch with my father and I told him the story about this dream or whatever it was. And he said, you know, when did that happen? Can you remember like what day that was? So like we kind of pinpointed it within like a 24 to 48 hour window based on, you know, saying, well, it was before I had this test and before I met this other doctor, you know, so we kind of figured out what day that had happened. And he said that it was within about 24 to 48 hours of when there was another patient in a room next to me who had passed away.
Oh, boy.
And the way that we interpreted it was that maybe death had come to pay that other person a visit. And he was kind of making the rounds to see if there's anybody else he should take with him.
Oh, man. Kind of like doing a two for one.
Yeah.
Oh
so goodness. It was really very unnerving. And it was the most, if it was a dream, it was the most realistic dream I've ever experienced. You know, because it was just, you know, the sight, the detail, everything. And if I could find a picture or something of the woman nurse that was with this ghost figure, right, I would recognize the picture. So I went back thinking, well, you know, kind of in anticipation of our discussion today, I thought, well, maybe I could find something about the property. And that hospital, it's fairly new. It was, I think, built in the 70s. But before I discovered that, I thought, well, really the only clue I have to go on is what they were wearing. So right. I went back and found, kind of pinpointed the style of the coats between the late 60s and late 70s. So, you know, 60s to 70s, which kind of made sense because the hospital was in downtown Ann Arbor and it moved kind of on to the outskirts of Ann Arbor. Back in 1977.
Ah, so you did some research. I'm impressed.
So that was as far as I've gotten on the research. You know, I'd like to try to find some old photos and see if, you know, I could try to find a face that looks like the nurse that I saw. But,
well, do us a favor. If you find it, can you call us back?
Oh, yeah, definitely. And then I had another kind of weird coincidence that happened in relation to this. There's so I did end up with a diagnosis, and there are conferences for patients because it's considered a very, very rare condition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just nice to get to know other patients because you don't really have that support system because it's so rare. So I went to one of these conferences, it was about a year ago, maybe mm-hmm. 8 months ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I met another patient, and we hit it off and kind of became, you know, friends during the conference. And she had a friend with her for moral support. And they said, oh, yeah, you know, we coined the term, the condition is called PNH. We coined the term punching PNH in the face. We're just going to punch it in the face. And I thought, oh, man, that's such a coincidence because I think I did punch something in the face.
Yeah. Yeah. You punched death in the face, as you said. Well, again, I wish you all the best with your health and everything. And I thank you so much for sharing the story. And I admire your research skills. And if you find out more, please let us know.
Oh, thank you. I will. Thank you very much.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed that campfire as much as I did. And I hope as you're on your travels for the Thanksgiving holiday to my countrymen and countrywomen in the U.S., I hope you travel safely. Maybe you can take along the campfire and share with some family members as you're spending some time together, and hope that you have the safest of travels and the happiest of Thanksgivings. We will be back next week, and we'll have another show before Thanksgiving, but sometimes people load these up and they don't listen for a few weeks, so I didn't want the opportunity to go by. And happy holidays to everybody. Thank you for being a part of the campfire. Hope you'll tell your campfire story. Go over to jimherold.com/campfire. It's a great way to do it. Sign up. In fact, it's the only way to do it, now that I think of it. And also, if you're on Facebook, check out my virtual campfire group. That's absolutely free. And that's over on Facebook. You just search for Jim Harold's Virtual Campfire and it'll pop up. And I'll also put a link in the show notes so you can sign up there as well. And that's absolutely free, open to everyone. Don't have to be a Plus member. That's something that's for all of us to enjoy. Thank you so much. I hope you enjoyed this time around the campfire, and we'll talk to you next time. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.